from The Wall Street Group, Travis Ford, security and advisory services offered through Client One Securities LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, and an investment advisor, Wall Street Group, Client One Securities LLC, not affiliate. Travis Ford, welcome back.
Good morning, guys. Calm before the storm.
Yeah, how was it? Well, you can be our traffic reporter. How was your drive in?
It was 36 degrees, a little damp, but nothing slippery at this point.
That's it. But if we want to talk about slippery before we get to...
But some of my models are forecasting some trouble later in the day.
Unless your investments are taken care of by Wall Street Group. Talk to us. We got the word from Jefferson City Police Department just the other day. You might be in on this. Tax scams making the rounds this time of year. It is that time of the year, isn't it?
Well, let's just be clear. I am not in on the tax scams, but I can I can help with that. Yeah, I did. I saw that story as well. This is a good reminder. These things happen all year round on different topics, and what we call phishing scams, when someone contacts you and they are phishing for your personal information. That's why they call them phishing scams, and they spell them with a clever PH phishing spelling. But the scam that goes on this time of year is people call and say, yes, ma'am, I'm John Doe with the IRS, and we have a few problems. We're taking a look at your return, and there are a few things we don't understand. Can you confirm your birth date and your social security number for us? For example, so that person is phishing for your social so that they can go open up a loan in your name or take out a credit card in your name, for example. The other scam with the IRS might be, I'm with the IRS, great news, we've reviewed your return, your refund is ready, and we'd like to direct deposit it in your bank account. Could I please get the number of your bank or credit union's routing number and your account number? And then we'll go ahead and direct deposit those funds. And of course, they're going to take money out of your account, not put money into it. So that's the hook of the IRS scam, but it's just the scam du jour. So later in the year, it might be somebody calling saying, you didn't show up for jury duty and you're going to be arrested. It's probably just a mistake. Can you confirm your social security number for me? So you see the pattern. The pattern is somebody calls you, somebody asks for your personal information. So I'm wearing my old Attorney General's office hat here. This is what I used to talk about all the time in consumer protection. The key here is you never want to give out information, personal information, to anyone who contacts you. You only want to give that out if you have initiated the contact. So it doesn't matter how exciting it is, they tell you you've won the lottery. It doesn't matter how scary it is, they tell you they're with the IRS or with the county sheriff's department. Whatever the ruse is, don't listen to them, and only give out your personal information when you have initiated the contact by calling or by going to a website that you know is legitimate. So you don't want to give it out over the phone to people who call you. You don't want to give it out to people who email you through a response. You want to go to legitimate sources, and then it's okay to provide personal information when it's needed.
My deal is phone numbers, too. If I don't recognize the phone number, even if it's a 573 or a local prefix, I usually don't answer it.
That's a good practice, too. If you don't recognize the number, you don't answer it. A lot of times the scammers won't even bother leaving messages. Right. But I would caution you, even if you do recognize the number, don't consider that legitimate, because anybody can do what they call caller ID spoofing, and they can make it look like they're calling from a familiar number, like your bank, your credit union. They can make their caller ID say Internal Revenue Service. They can program that stuff. So that is not a sign of a rubber stamp, a green light, when you see a familiar caller ID. Again, stick with the principle of only give out information if you have initiated the contact.
I remember when we had Attorney General Koster on with us one time a few years ago. He said these people can be very, very convincing and completely convince even the sharpest among us that they are who they say they are, correct?
Oh, yeah, they're good at what they do. And so don't be fooled by someone who sounds convincing, someone who scares the pants off of you. That's their talent. That's what they're good at. I had a client call me recently, and we were talking about their finances, but they happened to mention they had just gotten a pop-up on their computer that said that their computer was infected with viruses and they needed to call this number, which was supposedly Microsoft tech support, which would then remote into their computer and fix the problem. Well, again, they have not initiated that contact, but it did scare the pants off them. They were in their 70s. They thought their computer was infected by a virus, and they wanted to follow those exact instructions. And so they did not follow the principle of only provide information when you initiate the contact. So either they would have paid money to this company to supposedly fix their machine, which the company was not going to do. It was a scammer. Or this scammer would have installed some kind of software on their computer that would track their keystrokes, capture passwords, that type of thing.
Travis Ford in with us this morning from the Wall Street Group. Is we talk about several things. You want to talk about the stock market a little bit, Travis? I mean, it's...
Yes, please, let's do.
Is that one of your stock questions that you get with... From your savvy investors and everybody else, it's like, what the heck is up with the stock market?
Yes, and I just want to make sure we talk about what's happened in the last month, because it's a nice bookend to what happened a month ago when I was on, and we talked about how terrible the fourth quarter was. We really had a lot of bloodletting in the stock market in the fourth quarter. The S&P 500, which is the major measure, like the Dow, was down about 14% just in the fourth quarter alone. So that's a bad quarter. Well, in January, things radically turned around, and we were up 6% in the first month of the year. So it's just a great reminder. The last two times we've been together, a month ago and now, is a microcosm of life in the stock market. So if you are okay with that, the stock market is a great place to be if you're a long-term investor. If you are not okay with that, or if you are a short-term investor, it is not a good place to be. So you just have to be aware of what comes with the territory. The market goes up, the market goes down, and over time, people have always been rewarded by being in the stock market over long periods of time.
And you hold on to that with your IRAs and your Roths and those kinds of things, because stocks are part of those investment plans.
Correct. Stocks are in just about everybody listening. They're in your 401k plan. They are in your IRAs, your Roths, your mutual fund accounts. Stocks are the backbone of long-term investments. And they should be, because they've always rewarded us when we have patience. But again, people who have no stomach for that, people who don't need to take any risk because they've already saved enough to last the rest of their life, or people who have short-term needs coming up in the next year or two, probably don't want to be in the market, and we have good alternatives for people in those situations.
From the Wall Street Group, Travis Ford in with us this morning. Travis, talk to us about college savings. I know you like to hit on that on a regular basis, but it's always, like I said, a moving target. There are some changes, right?
It is one of the topics that comes up soonest when we're meeting with a couple that has children or a couple that has young grandchildren. In the case of the parents of young children, the first thing we want them to talk about is, do you have enough emergency savings in your local institution, bank or credit union? Do you have enough life insurance? And are you saving for retirement? Once we get those three steps, and by the way, we follow the 10, 10, and 10 rule on those things. We want to see at least $10,000 in the bank, if we can get you there. We want to see 10% of income going to retirement, and we want to see 10 times your income in life insurance. So that's a little side chat for another day. But once we get past those three gates, then we can talk about saving for education. And grandparents, again, oftentimes want to save for their grandchildren's education as well. And as some parents out there listening have noticed, the grandparents oftentimes are more generous with the grandchildren than they were with the children. And the parents say, you know, mom and dad weren't that generous with me when we were young. And well, man, they want to spend money on the grandkids. But
they've grown.
Yes, yes. Priorities have changed, and they oftentimes are in a better financial spot than they were when they had little kids. So, anyway, the college savings game really changed a lot under the new tax plan, believe it or not. We talked about this on the show a year ago, but I think it's always good to have a refresher. There were just a few words inserted in here, but it made a huge difference. And I'm talking specifically about the 529 plan. A lot of people refer to that as the MOST plan in Missouri. It is the college savings account that has certain tax advantages that go along with it. It's been around about 20 years, but 529 accounts were always set aside for higher education expenses. Well, last year's tax change, effective beginning of 2018, said 529 funds can be used for higher education or any level of private education. That's a huge game changer, because it means your 529 accounts can now be used for private elementary school or high school, so parochial schools. And in a town like this, where we have a large parochial population, this has a major impact. So it really opens the doors to all kinds of things. You can not only use those funds now for private school, but people who are doing so can get a tax deduction that has always been there, but the tax deduction, again, was only for the college funds. So now if you're putting money into private school tuition, you might as well run that money, consider running that money through a 529 plan so that you can get a tax deduction. You're spending the money anyway, so you might as well take a look at doing that. We've set up quite a few of those arrangements for our clients, so they're now passing that money through a 529 plan before they pay their tuition, and there's no reason really not to do that. In most cases, that is a tax-deductible expense.
What kind of percentages do you look at? Do you go by percentages when you set something up like that, or does it just depend on
like how much of your income?
Yeah.
How much?
Yeah.
I don't. We usually don't. Our philosophy is, again, let's get those first gates covered. Let's get the emergency funds, the life insurance, and the retirement savings. Those have to come first. And then after that, once you're paying your bills and you're living comfortably, whatever you can comfortably put into college savings, we're all for it. So for some people, that's $50 a month. I have some people who are doing $700 to $1,000 a month because they have several kids. So it just depends what you can afford. And we just the key is you don't want to sacrifice anything else in order to do any other important needs in order to do that. The life insurance has got to be there. The retirement savings has got to be there because there are lots and lots of ways for a kid to pay for college, but paying for retirement is strictly on your shoulders.
That's true. And if you're interested in Missouri Most program, I know there's a tab right on the homepage on the Missouri State Treasurer's website.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah, the state treasurer's offices generally run the 529 plans in each state. In Missouri, that is the case. Here we call it the Most, M-O-S-T program. It's a good program. You can go through the treasurer's office. You can go through an advisor like Wall Street Group. You have lots of options on how you do that. And those accounts will give you tax flexibility and some tax advantages, and now they can be used for any level of education. So that's exciting for a lot of people.
I think for a lot of people that you talk to too, Travis, maybe on the upper end of the demographic, thinking about bequeathing something to grandchildren or whatever, whether it's used for education or something else, there are a lot of tools, a lot of options out there, aren't there?
Yes, and that is a great point. And I think next month I want to talk a little bit about common misconceptions that we hear from people. Let me touch on one of those today, and that is gifting. There's a lot of belief out there that if I gift money to my children or grandchildren or a friend, then I'm going to be taxed on that money or they're going to be taxed on that money. That is very, very rare. That is only going to happen for people who have extremely large estates. So for most of us, gift taxes are never going to be an issue. And so there's a belief out there, if I give more than $14,000 in a year, for example, I have to pay taxes on that. Not true. So you can go ahead. This is a great way to gift money to someone and have no tax consequences, either to yourself or to the person receiving it. So if you want to put $10,000 in a grandchild's 529 account, go for it. If you want to put $20,000 in there, go for it. In most cases, that is not going to be an issue with taxes.
Do you get the question sometimes, what about real estate and folks saying, well, instead of selling the family farm or the family estate or the family house or whatever, can I leave it to the one grandchild?
Yes, and that really opens up a can of worms that we could spend a lot of time on, but just suffice it to say, it is better to leave property at death than it is to give it away while you're living, as a gift while you're living. So there are some tax issues there that really can be complicated. So leaving property, especially if it's worth more now than it was when you bought it, and that includes stocks, it includes real estate, it includes a business, anything that you want to pass on to the next generation, there are tax advantages to doing that through your estate.
Transfer on death.
Transfer on death,
right?
Instead of doing it during your lifetime. Yeah, if it's appreciated. If it's broken even or you've lost money on it, then go for it.
Travis Ford, Wall Street Group, before we let you out of here, what are the big questions you get from your clients this time of year as we're headed right into tax time, the last minute kinds of things?
Well, very good question. I'm glad you brought that up because I want to remind everybody you have until April 15th to put money into your IRAs and Roth IRAs and count it as a previous year contribution. So if you didn't put any money in your IRAs or you haven't maxed them out for 2018, you can still do that up until April 15th. Okay, rules for 401ks are different. That has to be calendar year. But for IRAs, the IRS allows you to figure out what your taxes are and then figure out if it makes sense to do a contribution in order to help your tax return look better.
Have you had any questions from folks who have heard the news stories and say, What did Missouri Department of Revenue do with my income taxes? Is that going to be a challenge for me?
I have not, but I was meeting with a CPA friend last week, and he said they're already getting those questions.
I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah. How have things turned out with the new federal tax plan in effect?
You know, I think we're going to know after April 15th. This is the first tax preparation season under the new tax law. So I think a lot of people have not yet realized the effects and have not felt the effects yet until their taxes are done. So we'll have to wait and see. The belief is that for the most part, the tax brackets are lower, the standard deduction is higher. So that should help people for the most part. But we still need to see how that shakes out.
I had an elderly lady tell me in the store the other day that it worked out very well for her. Now, I don't know what her situation was, but that it had come out very well for her. So maybe there's that coming.
Yes, it's hard to know until we have our taxes done. And in her case, she probably has Social Security and pension income, and that's it. So it would have been quick and easy for her to get her taxes done, and she may have done them early. Mm-hmm.